And it's Ruminations Tuesday on this April the 9th in the year of our Lord 2013. I am your co-host, Pastor Tom Baker, on Law and Gospel, and with me, my good friend and co-host, the Reverend Dr. Mark Smith. Good afternoon.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
Yeah, I had some pretty interesting things this morning.
Interesting?
Oh, yes. But boy, did I get scared last night. I just about had a heart attack.
Is that right? Goodness sake.
Because I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to put it in a way. I had heard it on a radio station when I was heading to do a sermon on a Sunday. In fact, it was Easter Sunday. And this gentleman who was preaching kind of gave this story, and I want to share it with you. And so last night I was going through it, and I'll tell you where the heart attack almost came. But first of all, let me tell you the story.
All right.
It's about a landowner in Budapest who sends his servant to the market to get some food. And when the servant gets to the market, he looks over, and one of the items he sees is the personality of death itself. You know how sometimes death appears to be
like a grim reaper
in a human form. Yes. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at him. With her eyes wide open, an older lady.
Hmm.
And so he rushes back to his master and says, please, please, let me borrow your horse so I can ride to Visegrad and get away from her. And so he likes him, so he gives him the horse, and he takes off to Visegrad. About an hour later, the man decides to go to the marketplace to see for himself this phantom of death. And when he gets there, he sees her.
Uh-huh.
And he goes up to her and he says, why did you scare my servant? She says, no, I wasn't scaring him. I was shocked to see him here in this marketplace because I have an appointment with him tonight in Visegrad.
Ooh. Yeah. I've heard other little different versions of that.
Well, what was interesting, of course, the man made the point that all of us are going to die.
Yeah.
There's nowhere you can flee.
Right.
And it was very good beginning to the resurrection of Jesus.
Sure.
You know, and we're going to talk about death from our point of view. But while I'm, and I was just so happened in the front room, and I'm lying on my chair kind of goes back, and I'm trying to go to sleep there on there. And,
you fell back?
No.
Like Eli.
Just as I get in my mind, my eyes are closed, and I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to say this about as a merchant goes and sees this horrid woman who's death, Mitzi, my cat, jumps up on me.
And that is not just a small cat.
No.
I've seen Mitzi.
She's a Maine Coon.
She's not fleet of foot.
She's about 40 pounds when she jumps.
Kidding.
And I tell you,
the Grim Reaper was right on you. Huh?
I remember a thing in the paper a long time ago. They were trying to show how, you know, clues to murder, and it was a woman with her husband in church, and what happened? She tried to wake him up, you know, because he was falling asleep, and he had a heart attack. And she said, "Well, the reason was is he thought that somebody was murdering him."
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, she was arrested for his murder because how do you know anybody's thoughts? Well, they're asleep. See?
Yeah. Oh, I see. She slipped up.
Yeah, she slipped up when she said that. See, it's one of those brainy things where you're supposed to go through and see, okay, why do we know that that was a person?
Yeah. Kind of like the story they gave to the Roman soldiers to say, tell them that while you were sleeping, the disciples came along and stole the body.
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
How would they know that the disciples had stole it if they were sleeping?
Yes. Yeah, it just... Did you see in the Bible, the History Channel's Bible, the stone actually was broken in two.
And, in the history.
Yeah, that's not in the Bible, though.
No.
It was just rolled away.
Just rolled away.
But... yeah, so we'll, something to think about. But let's get to our subject then, and anybody can phone us here. We're going to talk about death in light of Christ's death and resurrection. Numbers here in St. Louis, 505-7850, and toll-free?
1-800-730-2727.
I believe that CFW Walter and Long Gospel makes a really good point. You can't say anything about a Christian that you can't say about all Christians at all times and all places.
You can't say anything about a Christian that you can't say about Christians in all times and all places. Yeah, yeah, I would agree. And I think I agree with that.
Okay, I'll give you an example that I've thought of. You can't say that Christians are not afraid of death.
No, that's right. Christians still, you still have that that old Adam fear of death, right?
Now, I've had shut-ins without any family around.
Oh, yeah.
Really looking forward.
They're ready
forward.
To go.
Yeah, they're
oh,
not
absolutely.
Afraid of death.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, they can't understand why the Lord hasn't taken them.
Yes, exactly. So it's not true that no Christian is not afraid of death. There are plenty who are not afraid of death.
Right.
And God often will give the strength. We understand that when families and their children were thrown to lions under Caesar, that they got a kind of a spiritual adrenaline that they didn't even feel the pain, and they were actually smiling as they were being killed. So that does happen. And, you know, Peter refused to be crucified.
He was. They crucified him upside down.
Yeah, he didn't want to be
like his Lord.
Yeah. So, but when you do run into a Christian, see, you can't say something like that because then those Christians who are afraid of death think they're not Christian.
They feel bad. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wonder if they don't have faith.
Exactly. Well said.
That's sad. You don't want to undermine their faith that way.
No, not at all.
So I think it is important that you, that in sermons and Bible studies, when you talk about it, that you should let people realize, well, it's okay to be afraid. Of death.
Yes, it's not. So, well, death is still our enemy.
Right. The last enemy, in fact.
The last enemy, and Jesus has defeated that at the very moment. You know, it's interesting, those who were risen from the dead, like Lazarus and the young son, and etc., they don't write anything about their experience between the time they died and were resurrected from the dead.
No, and wouldn't it be interesting to know?
I believe they didn't go through, God knowing they were going to be resurrected, they didn't go through the normal
experience.
Yeah, well said, you know. So, but I could be wrong on that, but it would have been very interesting to have a conversation with Lazarus the day after
right.
he was raised.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, my. But he ended up dying. Still.
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and then you will answer them on the basis of Scripture and our Lutheran confessions. These are things that people think are true. And the first one, we touched on a little bit this week, but I want a clean answer from you, is it possible that the ghosts or spirits of our loved ones can return?
No. No, we don't believe that they remain. As Jesus said, this day you'll be with me in paradise.
Yes.
So they go, those saints that die in the Lord, they go to be with him in paradise right away, and they don't hover around old houses and cemeteries. We don't believe in ghosts. We do. There are such things as evil spirits, but those are evil angels, evil demons.
Well said.
They're not saints that have passed on, or even unbelievers.
And you probably have this memorized: the mighty fortress. He's judged the deed is done.
One little word can fell him.
Yes, yes. So we have nothing really to fear. I'm a firm believer that a Christian cannot be demonized. In other words, cannot be possessed by a demon.
Yeah. Isn't there a difference of is there or is there not a difference of opinion on that, though?
Don? Oh, there are.
No. Don't some people, I've heard that
there
differed,
are.
That some say, a Christian can be possessed.
Yeah.
You don't agree?
No, not at all.
You think that a Christian, there is no way they can be possessed by Satan?
No. Satan can overcome you and maybe give you addictions and things like that. Mm-hmm. But as to demon possession, you're possessed by the Holy Spirit now.
Yeah, well, that's really
Christian.
The way I feel. But I don't understand why there's difference of opinion on that. I've read in theological texts. I don't know why they would differ on that. Maybe they've...
Because there are occasions, like, we actually have a liturgy for demon possession.
Yes, yes.
The Lutheran Church does.
Well, baptism. Some of the...
Well, that's true, but...
Some of the baptisms have a small exorcism.
But that's more so that from the kingdom of Satan, not that you were possessed by Satan. Okay. But the Roman Catholic Church does it much more
right.
than does the Lutheran Church. Although in England, I understand there is a pastor there, Lutheran, who does quite a few exorcisms. Mm. But those are on unbelievers and bringing them out. For example, it was after the fellow with the seven demons was unpossessed that he then believed in Jesus.
The seven demons.
Remember,
you're not talking about Mary Magdalene.
No. Oh, wait a minute. I'm talking about the ones that went into the pigs.
Oh, we are legion?
Yeah.
The ones that said that they were
That's
legion.
Right. Legion, yeah.
And the whole multitude of pigs was occupied by them. Right?
Yeah. And they, you know, she said, well, I'll let you go into the pig. Oh, that's a good idea. And then he had them jump into the over
into
the cliff,
the lake.
Into the lake, and they drowned, which a pig hardly drowns.
Right. Very difficult for him to drown.
Well, yeah, you push him down, he pops right back up because you have so much fat or whatever it is that keeps him from going down. But it's kind of a nature that we need to help our people get away from false views of death. For example, the biggest bad one among many evangelicals today is called the rapture. And what does that basically teach?
Well, the rapture, of course, is they believe that prior to Christ's second coming, you'll be driving down the highway and cars will careen out of control because their drivers will be taken up.
Yeah, raptured.
And, raptured. And, or a basketball player will, in the middle of the game, the ball will be bouncing and the player will be gone because he was raptured.
That's why when I get on a plane, I make sure the pilots aren't Christians. Are you a Christian? I want a Jewish pilot. I insist on that. Of course, that would mean that I don't think I'm going.
We don't believe in a rapture.
No, of course not. Of course, I'm not making fun of this. But, I mean, for somebody to be not thinking they're going to be up in the rapture means that they're not considered to be Christian.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, death is kind of interesting among Christians in contrast to Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm not sure if you...
They believe in annihilation, don't they?
Yes. You actually go out of existence and are in the mind of God, and then on Judgment Day, God, in his memory, brings you back into existence if you were good enough.
This is Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes, yes.
Explain that again,
okay.
Carefully.
I went to a funeral. It actually, one of my members had a sister whose husband was a Jehovah's Witness, and she was in surgery. Now, she wasn't a Jehovah's Witness, but some complications arose, and she needed a blood transfusion, and he refused to give it.
Right.
They don't
believe in that.
No, she died. And so I went to the funeral with my member to help comfort her.
She was a Christian.
Yes.
Okay.
And I believe also was the one who died. But you see, the doctors can't give anything of a medical unless the next of kin okays it.
Right.
See, and in that case, they didn't. He did not. And that's where the Jehovah's Witness, don't want to call him a preacher, but the guy who was up there talking, he at any rate was making the point that she was such a wonderful lady, and we know that she'll be brought back into the remembrance of Jesus on Judgment Day. And I remember Marlene was her sister's name. We walked out of church together, and she looked at me and said, Pastor Tom, I did not recognize who he was talking about because he sure wasn't talking about my sister because she is a poor, miserable sinner just like I am. And see, this is what happens when you get into the law orientation. The only comfort you can have
is that they were nice people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. How do you do that in a funeral where, on the one hand, you may have a like that one lady who was blind, a member of your congregation. Remember, you even put an elevator up for her.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to talk something about her works. But how did you do it in such a way, because you buried her, I believe.
Yes. Oh, wonderful Christian.
Yeah. How did you do it without giving the impression that's how she was getting to heaven?
Well, I usually say, but the beloved, they knew, as we know, that they're poor, miserable sinners, that they're saved totally by the grace of God and Jesus Christ. I always add that, see. I mean,
and that the works were just a result of her faith.
Yeah. You don't eulogize to the point where people think they're misled into thinking that they're in paradise because they were good. That's you need to help people understand, look, it's all by the grace of God. We're all poor, miserable sinners. Apart from Christ, we wouldn't have any hope.
One of my members, who was Lutheran, had a sister who was Roman Catholic. And at the funeral, I made mention that she considered herself a poor, miserable sinner, and there was no way she was going to get to heaven by her works. And then I talked about Jesus. And the Roman Catholic lady after was just furious with me, talking about her sister in that way. And we started writing letters to one another. I could not convince her of the truth. But in her block, where she lived, on her block, lived a Roman Catholic priest. And what happened, she went over to talk to him about this terrible Lutheran pastor.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, I don't want to get you upset, but that pastor was correct. We are poor sinners in need of Christ. And that changed her mind.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was very interesting. She was from a holiness church.
Yes.
And, you know, the holiness church, boy, they even get to the point where they think they can actually stop from sinning.
That's right.
And when somebody says, I no longer sin, that's a sin.
That's a big mistake.
Yeah, yeah. Either they're not married, so you can't talk to their spouse, you know, and it's really interesting what a false front many people have. They seem so nice and such, and then every now and then you get into a situation where their true self comes out.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and they think that by hiding it that they're okay with God. But God?
No, you can't pull the wool over God's eyes.
No, because it's not just by deed, it's also by sins are thought and...
Right. He sees
and word.
Through to the heart, right.
Yeah, he can read the heart. So, from the biblical point of view, what happens when a Christian dies?
Well, of course, the body is buried, returns to the dust from where it originally came, and the soul goes to be with our Savior, a Christian, that is.
There's two examples in the Bible where we know that's true.
The thief on the cross.
Right.
And
this gentleman was stoned.
Oh, Stephen.
Yeah.
Stephen, right.
Stephen, I say Stephen.
Stephen, Stephen.
Okay, you're probably correct. You're using the Greek pronunciation.
Stephanos.
Yeah, Stephanos. Now we got to figure out where the
emphasis
accent.
On the wrong syllables.
Yes. So, what did he say as he was being stoned?
He said, look, I see, didn't he say, I see,
yes.
I see Jesus?
Yeah, the Son of Man at the
Son
right.
Son of Man at the right hand of God. And and he said, very similar to what Jesus
yes.
said, into thy hands I commit my spirit.
Right, right. The same thing Jesus right. said. So we actually have three human beings that we know went to heaven in the spirit.
Okay, the thief on the cross, Stephen, and who else?
Let's try Jesus.
Okay. All right.
How
all
did
right.
you forget
well,
it so quickly?
I thought you meant beside Jesus, of course.
No, I said three human beings.
All right. Well, he was human. There's no doubt about that.
He is human.
He is human.
Yes.
Right. He still is.
Yeah.
Will never cease to be human and God.
Yeah, divine and human natures, and that's where we got last week into the communication of attributes. And apotelestamatica, idiomatic, and majestic.
Idiomatic. Apotelestamatic.
Yeah, apotelestamatic and majestic.
Yes.
Those are the three. Now, do you pronounce it genus or genus?
A genus.
It is.
Genus
okay.
apotelestamaticum.
Okay, I didn't know how you pronounce that. I've heard genus.
And genus majestaticum.
And all this means, ladies and gentlemen listening, is that the attributes of the divine are now communicated over to the human, so that in his human nature, Jesus is everywhere. And that's why it's so difficult against reason, because how can a human body, which is three-dimensional, be everywhere? Well, because the attributes of the divine, that human body not only is everywhere, it also knows all things in its humanity. So in the state of humiliation, he did not make use of these divine attributes.
Did not make use of them.
Yes. And, but in
although
this,
they were accessible to him.
Well, I think there's a few times he did make use of them.
Right. Oh, yeah, sure.
Like on the boat.
Yeah.
Peace be still. He's not praying to the Father for the sea to be calm. He's doing it himself.
And also when he recognized Bartholomew or Nathanael, when he knew, he said, before you were in the fig tree, I saw him.
Yes.
Remember that?
That it is.
He made use of his
omniscience. We don't know
there.
If his father might have given him that. The one that's really the funny one, who's the disciple that says nothing good can come out of
Nazareth?
Nazareth. Who was that?
That was Nathanael.
It was
Nathanael?
And then he comes
and approaches Jesus and says, oh, here comes one in whom there is no guile. He says, how do you know me? He says, I saw you when you were standing under the fig tree.
But I think that's the funniest thing.
It is.
Like he comes out in whom there is no guile. Oh, that is me. How do you know me? Yeah. I mean,
I'm trying to think, you know, speaking of the three genuses, I'm thinking genus majestaticum, genus apotelismaticum. What's the third one? Remember the third one?
Idiomatic.
Idiomaticum.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I got to review those.
Oh, by the way, I got, and this is, you know, between us here, a diagram of it done by Kurt Marquardt.
Oh, that'd be excellent.
Oh, it's
give me
just
a copy.
Yeah, I shall. Yes. Okay, and if anybody else wants one, just give me a ring, and I'll be glad to mail it to you or email it to you at lawgospel at lawgospel.com or our phone number, 1-877 and then CMS 1962. So if you phone me, leave me your name, your phone number, your address, and we'll – it's about 5 pages long.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's really got some good stuff.
I bet that's, you know, that is, I'll tell you, when you talk about the mystery of
the
communication of attributes,
yeah.
It's hard to get your head around it sometimes.
But it has such practical consequences. For example, if you don't believe in the communication of attributes, then when you take the Lord's Supper, you can't be taking his body and blood.
Right.
Because that's up at the right hand of God, according to Calvin. See?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that we need to look at.
His modes of presence. That's another thing that I need to review. You know, the different modes in which he's present.
Yes, yes. Because let's give people an example. When Moses was on Mount Sinai on Thursday and he saw the bush.
The burning bush.
No, the regular bush.
Oh, the regular bush, okay.
God was omnipresent there.
Right.
But on Friday, when it was burning, God was sacramentally present.
In the burning bush.
Yes.
Yes.
He was present in a holy way.
Right. The same way he's present under the bread and wine, right?
Exactly, yes. And you know, Moses had to take off his shoes.
I use that illustration all the time.
Yes. So, in one sense, God's omniscient. In another sense, wow. You know what? I haven't even been looking, but we have got phone calls lined up. Let's see how many we can get in. Let's start with Lee. Hi, Lee. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. You've touched on some of the words, but I wanted to get a little deeper into it. It wasn't really what I was calling about, but you said something about the rapture. Isn't there some religion that believes like people are raptured like for 1,000 years or something?
Yes, yes. That's what Mark was talking about.
Okay. What does that mean?
Oh, they believe that you're actually going to be
taken up. You're taken up to escape the terrible, terrible end which awaits the world. And believers, they believe that believers will be raptured, taken up to escape that terrible, cataclysmic, all the terrors of the end of the world.
Yeah, what are those movies out on it?
Oh, Left Behind. The Left Behind.
Left Behind. Yeah, that's
by Tim LaHaye.
We don't believe any of that.
No.
No, I know that. Yeah. What I was really calling about is when it says in the Creed, ascended to heaven and seated at the right hand of the Father, what definition would there be for Jesus being seated at the right hand of the Father?
You would go to Revelation chapter 5 where God the Father is on the throne and Jesus comes up and takes out of his right hand the scroll of salvation. And being on the right hand doesn't mean physically at his right hand. It means spiritually he's his right hand man.
Right.
He's okay.
Ultimate power.
Yes.
Then what then what does that mean in Matthew 25:31 when it says that when Jesus comes and all the angels with him and he's seated on the glorious throne and all the nations be gathered before him and he'll separate and separate the sheep from the goats.
That's the last judgment.
The sheep will be at his right hand. And what does that mean?
The last judgment.
That's the last judgment.
I know that.
And guess who's going to be your judge, Lee? Your brother, his name is Christ.
Yeah. Right.
Your advocate.
So you have nothing to fear.
But I didn't know what that means at the right hand, and then Jesus is at the right hand. I don't know if there's any connection there. Or...
No. Being at the right hand, he would be the right-hand man of God the Father in judging the world at that time.
Okay. Okay.
Thank
you very much.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm sorry, Andy, we're not going to be able to get to you. We're out of time, but... you could call back Friday, open mic Friday, or maybe with Wes Reimnitz on Thursday. We've got Ruminations again. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to you. I'm Tom Baker. Mark, your worship services Sunday and Saturday?
Sunday at 9 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m.
Okay, thank you very much. And tomorrow on Wednesday, we're going to be taking a look at the arguments in support of evidential apologetics. I'm Tom Baker. Till then... God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.